Welcome to the Menstruality Podcast, where we share inspiring conversations about the power of menstrual cycle awareness and conscious menopause. This podcast is brought to you by Red School, where we're training the menstruality leaders of the future. I'm your host, Sophie Jane Hardy, and I'll be joined often by Red School's founders, Alexandra and Shani, as well as an inspiring group of pioneers, activists, changemakers, and creatives to explore how you can unashamedly claim the power of the menstrual cycle to activate your unique form of leadership for yourself, your community, and the world. Hey there, welcome back to the Menstruality Podcast. Thank you for tuning in today. This episode is such a treat. It's one of the conversations that Alexandra had for our Wise Power retreat earlier this year when we were launching our Wise Power Menopause book. And it's with a woman who's had a really profound impact on my life personally, visionary activist and author Lynn Twist. It was such a delight to listen to this conversation. Lynn had some amazing, right there in the moment, realizations about how her menopause process transformed her expression of her calling in the world, moving from ending world hunger to founding the Pachamama Alliance to restore the world's rainforests alongside Indigenous peoples. It's a fascinating story. And I also loved Alexandra's inspiration at Lynn's energy and passion and how she feels more turned on and fired up than ever in her 70s. It's also a really timely conversation for us at Red School because we're just about to open registration for next year's Menstruality Leadership Programme, and everything that Lynn shares about feminine leadership and the kinds of leadership qualities that menopause awakens in us is in real alignment with everything that Alexandra and Shani share on the programme. So we've got a webinar coming up about the MLP and also a special Q&A for people who are approaching menopause or are in menopause or are post-menopause about the Menstruality Leadership Programme, but I'll share more about that later. And for now, let's get started with menopause, leadership and living a committed life with Lynn Twist.
Welcome to the Wise Power Retreat, where I'm having a series of intimate conversations with people about their menopause experience and what it revealed and liberated in them. This series of conversations is about the power, authority, and purpose that menopause awakens in us, and what's possible individually and collectively when this rite of passage is supported and dignified. So today I am so delighted to be talking to Lynn Twist. Lynn Twist is a global visionary, author and teacher. She's an award-winning speaker and has devoted her life to sustainability and economic integrity. She is president and founder of the Soul of Money Institute and co-founder with her husband, Bill Twist, of the Pachamama Alliance, which works to preserve the rainforest by empowering the Indigenous people who are its natural custodians. Lynn has helped organize and fund Nobel Peace Prize laureates, and she is the author of a number of books, including The Soul of Money and the soon to be published Living a Committed Life. In fact, it's being published on the 18th of October. And Lynn, this actually so happens to be World Menopause Day that you're
focusing. It does? No
it is.
Way.
It is world. So you are on track.
Oh God, I love hearing that. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, that's kind of nice timing, really.
With our my God. Oh, that's incredible. I didn't know there was a menopause day, but now I know. And I'm
so now happy. You know, and your book is marking that day. And actually, I couldn't think of a better book to mark that day. And it is for anybody, but it is particularly a book for those post-menopause, because I do think of menopause is a time of awakening, an extraordinary time of awakening, and it really opens us up to a much bigger kind of lens on the world of serving something much bigger in the world. And your book is just the perfect thing to drop in at that moment to guide someone. I would love to begin, Lynn, by, I mean, you've been an activist all your life, but I would love to hear what menopause gave you in this journey of your commitment to life, to serving life on this planet. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you experienced how you experienced menopause and what it gave you.
Well, I'm so grateful for this conversation and for you and for your book. So I just want to say that, because I did not realize, and I'm going to, you know, just say it right now until talking with you now, that when I was in menopause, I think it was when I was in menopause, is when the Pachamama Alliance story began. And I'm kind of stunned to realize that. So I for many, many years, I was one of the leaders of something called the Hunger Project. And I traveled the world. I managed fundraising operations in 53 countries. I managed a huge volunteer network, 200,000 people in the United States, 40,000 people in Bangladesh. I mean, I didn't manage all of them, but you know, that was the structure I was inside of and had a role in. And I thought I would do that for the rest of my life. I'd made a commitment that was very profound for me to end world hunger. And even though I was trying to manage all of that and raise my three kids and, you know, take care of my wonderful husband and, you know, stay alive and well, I just was devoted to the Hunger Project and its work and our work there. And I never thought I'd leave that wonderful organization or that work. But when I was 50 years old, and I have to really look back and say, I think it was in menopause then, I received a series of visions, you might say. Another way of talking about them are dreams. When I was in Guatemala in a very strange and unfamiliar to me shamanic ceremony with my friend John Perkins. And during this shamanic ceremony, and there was no medicine, it was a wonderful shaman on the top of a mountaintop in Totonicapan, Guatemala, with a big fire in the middle, and we were lying on the ground with our feet towards the fire like a wagon wheel, 12 of us. And this wonderful man, Roberto Pose was his name, very interesting shaman, Mayan shaman. He was drumming and chanting and whistling and told us to journey. And it was midnight when we began this ceremony. And I didn't really know what he meant by journey, but I knew closing my eyes was easy because it was midnight and I was tired. So I thought I'd just, you know, take a nap. And but his drumming, you know, and his voice, his singing, he was chanting and singing and whistling. And it was just incredibly mesmerizing and hypnotic. And I started to feel my body have all these strange feelings, and my right arm started to quiver, and it turned into some sort of a wing-like thing that I had to extend, and then my left arm, same thing, kind of turned into this kind of weird field, like felt like a wing thing, and a hard thing started growing on my face. It felt like a beak, and I felt like I just had to lift myself up and fly. I couldn't have laid there for one more second. And then when I did kind of lift what I thought was my body up into this beautiful starry night, I looked down and I saw myself down there, laying there quietly with the other people, in the 12 people in this wonderful circle around the fire. And I could see and hear the shaman, but his voice was as if it was right in my ear. And the whistling and the chanting and the drumming was very present. And so it was so glorious. Started to fly up into the night sky. It was millions of stars. I'm going there right now. And it was just awesome and hypnotic and mesmerizing and freeing and beautiful. And I was flying like this in slow motion. And then I looked down and it was starting to dawn. And I saw that I was flying over a vast, unending forest of green, this extraordinary, glorious rainforest. And so in that same way, I was slowly in slow motion flying with this kind of elegant experience of flying. It was just fantastic and blissful.
I'm then, there with you now, Lynn.
Oh my God. And then these disembodied faces of men with orange geometric face paint on their faces and yellow, red, and black feather crowns on their heads, disembodied faces of men, started floating up through the forest floor, through the canopy, from the forest floor, through the canopy, to the bird, me, calling to me in a strange language. And then they would disappear. And then they would float up from the forest again and call to the bird. And then they would disappear. And I would keep flying. And it was sort of like this dance. It was so wonderful and kind of glorious. And then they would show up again and then they would disappear. And they were clearly communicating to me as the bird. And then there was this loud drumbeat. And I opened my eyes and realized, oh, I'm not a bird, I'm a person. And I sat up and the fire was down to embers. And I looked around the fire and it was clear that everybody in the circle had a strange experience. And the shaman asked us each to share our story and I shared mine. And at the end, he dismissed everyone but me and my friend John Perkins because he had had the same vision. And so the two of us and the shaman had a kind of a little moment where the shaman said, this was not a vision, this was a communication. You're being contacted, probably by an uncontacted tribal people who's waiting and asking you for contact. And I thought, no kidding, no way, that's cool, but I can't do that. I'm ending world hunger. I don't know anything about the Amazon. I don't speak Spanish. I've never been to South America. I'm all about Africa and Asia. And I got to go to a meeting in Ghana. I can't even think about this. John, on the other hand, my friend John Perkins, he had been in the Peace Corps in Ecuador 20 years before. He had been working for many, many years with the Shuar people. He knew immediately. He said, Lynn, I know who these people are. I know where they are. They're the Achuar. And they've never had contact with the outside world and they're ready for contact and we must go to them. And I said, John, I can't do that. I'm on my way to Ghana. So he said, they won't leave you alone till you come and you wait and see. And so I was discombobulated, but I thought, this is not my work. I'm ending world hunger. So I went to Ghana and I was in a meeting in Ghana with, sorry, this is so long. I'm almost done. With eight wonderful Ghanaian people, five men and three women, around an oval table in a hotel called the Novotel in Accra, Ghana. And I'm sitting in on a Hunger Project Ghanaian board meeting. And I'm from the global office, so I wasn't leading the meeting. I was participating. And at a certain time in this meeting, the men, the five men, and by the way, people in Ghana have almost blue-black skin. It's so dark. They're very, very beautiful people. At a certain point, the men, and just the men, started having orange geometric face paint appear on their black faces. And I thought, oh my God, no one was saying anything about this. The women weren't, nobody was acknowledging it. Everybody was talking as if this was not happening. So I thought, oh my God, that weird thing in Guatemala has me hallucinating. I didn't say anything. I just left as we do. And I went to the ladies' room, which is, you know, that's what we do.
That's what we do.
And I splashed my face with water and tried to get out of this, whatever this was. It was kind of making me crazy. And I went back in and everybody was still talking and it was a lovely meeting and very productive. And then maybe 10 or 15 minutes in to that second portion, it happened again. And I just burst into tears. And people asked, you know, even the ones with the orange face paint, what's wrong? And I said, well, I don't really know what it is, but I'm feeling very ill. And I've been in so many countries and so many time zones. I was supposed to stay for 5 days, but I absolutely know that I'm just too sick to stay. So don't worry. I'm going to go to my room. I'll get a taxi to the airport. I just need to go back to the United States. And they were all worried about me, but I said, you know, you stay here, keep doing your meeting. And I went up to my room. I got my suitcase. I went to the airport. This is 1994. 1994, yeah. No internet, no cell phones or anything. So you just went. And I got on a plane to Frankfurt, then Frankfurt to New York, New York to San Francisco. And the whole way, the faces kept coming to me over and over and over, whether I had my eyes open or shut. So when I got home, I was just like a maniac. I told my husband, Bill, a little bit of this story, but I was afraid I was going crazy. So I was kind of embarrassed. So I didn't tell him the way I'm telling you. And then I wanted to reach my friend John Perkins to see if the same thing was happening to him. But he had gone back to the Amazon, so he was unavailable. But eventually he did come home to a million voicemails, remember voicemail, and a million faxes, remember faxes?
Yes, remember
that. And saying, call me, call me, call me. I'm having weird dreams. I can't sleep. You know, I need to talk to you. And he came back and said right away, Lynn, the Achuar are waiting for us. We have to go. They're asking for first contact, which is a huge privilege. We have to go, and they want 12 people, not just the two of us. People with global voice, people with open hearts, 12 people who know the rainforest is critical to the future of life, people who know that indigenous people are key to the future of understanding the world, and people who are open to the wisdom of the shaman. And so we picked 10 people. I picked my husband first. And we traveled down to Quito, Ecuador, down the Valley of the Volcanoes, over the eastern side of the Andes, down the Pastaza River Canyon, and took a small plane into Achuar territory, landed by a dirt landing strip, kind of really just an opening in the forest next to a river. And then the planes flew away, two planes that took us in, little planes. And then, you know, 10 minutes in, they came out of the forest with their orange geometric face paint, the yellow, red, and black feather crowns. And that was the beginning of the Pachamama Alliance. And I tell you that long, long answer to your question because I now realize that I was in menopause. I did not know that till this minute. And I think you'll probably help me understand that when the visions came to me in Guatemala, I was able to receive them, maybe. I don't know. But ever since then, the shamans that we work with in the Amazon, and now I work with Pachamama Alliance, I decided I had to leave the Hunger Project and that this was my new calling. And it's been the second half of my adult life. I've been doing Pachamama Alliance for 27 years. I did the Hunger Project for 27 years. So I didn't realize, though, that I was in menopause. So you probably have something to say about this, but it's sort of a revelation.
I do have one or two things to say. Firstly, I just feel the impact. I mean, I'm just feeling so moved by what you're saying. And I can almost feel tears stirring in me for the depth of feeling, the depth of what you're describing. And it's really touching me because menopause is this opening where your whole life gets redirected, rewired, and it's like you're on this path page, trotting along, thinking, yeah, I'm doing fine, this is great, you know, I'm ticking all the boxes, I'm happy, it's good, and then menopause comes along, takes it, you know, throws it all on the ground, throws it all around. And then something else comes that is, out of nowhere almost. But of course there are threads and, you know, all sorts of things going on beforehand. But it is this sort of almost wonder, and it won't let you go. I mean, that's what moved me, is that once you had sort of made contact with, you know, I would sort of call the calling, but for you it was with these people, the Achua people. They stayed with you. They were tracking you. And I mean, my goodness me, your Hunger Project was world work, but this seems of another order again.
Well, I love talking to you. I can't tell you because I didn't see any of this until now. I was a mother and an active mother all the years of the Hunger Project. I had three tiny children, you know, babies practically. But when the Hunger Project started, my kids were 3, 5, and 7, and I had no extra time to work on ending world hunger. I had three little kids. And I was a substitute teacher. I was doing things, but I didn't have a career. And the Hunger Project swept me off my feet. And I thought, how can I do this and mother my kids? But I did for, you know, 25, 26, 27 years. I was in Ethiopia with people after the 1984, 1985 famine. But then I left in time to get to Spring Sing and the soccer championship for my daughter and my son. You know, I would catch planes and do anything to get back for that. And then I would be at the UN making a presentation, and I would be thinking, did Bill, my husband Bill, or did the nanny remember it's snack day for third grade? You know, I mean, I was actively mothering and ending world hunger, and I saw it as part of my mothering too, because, you know, who was and still is suffering from hunger is women and children.
Yes.
So very, very connected to that heartbreaking situation for women who can't feed their own children. It makes me cry. So I felt that I was mothering the world and my own children at the same time. But when I turned 50, now I didn't really see it till now, and my kids were, you know, they were on their own, so to speak. You know, there's a point at which you have to let them go, and you don't want to, and you want them to be on their own, but you're holding on. And then I was a very reluctant to let them go mom, like most, I think, but I wanted them on their own, et cetera. You know, that mm-hmm. moment where you're kind of, and then the Pachamama Alliance came along and swept me off my feet. And that too was about the great mother, the earth, Pachamama. That's what Pachamama means. Because I was no longer of childbearing age. I was refiring, you know, as Barbara Marks Hubbard, I'm sure you knew her too.
Yes.
She called it regenopause. Regenopause, that's what that is. You regenerate yourself to live for your own mission and purpose after you're complete with the responsibility of childbearing, even if you're not a mother.
Yeah.
You have a refiring, a regenopause, a regeneration. Mm. So I just love this conversation. I never saw this before, so I'm so excited.
Well, what I'd love to hear, I mean, was menopause a challenge for you? Or it sounds like you sort of stepped almost fully formed into the Pachamama Alliance, but was there negotiation for you within yourself about changing gear like this?
I making it sound like I went from this to that, and I didn't.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That would be misleading. I resisted with all my might the Pachamama Alliance path, because I had made all these commitments to, I mean, literally hundreds of thousands of people. I've been here since the beginning of the Hunger Project. I will be here till the end, or till the end of my life, until we end hunger, or till the end of my life. You can count on me.
Yeah.
And I said that, and I meant it. So when the rainforest work started to call, my husband, he answered the call more than I did, because he was a business guy, but he was kind of done with business. And he became very, very engaged. And I was trying to do the Hunger Project and go to the rainforest and go to Africa and Asia. And it just, I practically killed myself trying to do everything, which is one of those feminine things that probably everybody can relate to. And then I got very sick. And I also want to say what an incredible gift that was. I got malaria. Now, no one who's had malaria would say it's a gift, but in my case, it was, because first of all, we didn't know it was malaria. It was months before that diagnosis was accurate. I had seven malaria tests before it became clear that I had it, because I kept thinking I've got malaria. I felt the way people looked that I'd worked with for years in the Hunger Project. So anyway, I got really sick. I couldn't even be on a conference call. I couldn't sit up. I was so sick. And I wasn't dying. I was just sick. And I couldn't do anything for anyone. And I had to be with myself. My kids were gone. You know, they weren't taking care of me. Bill was all about Pachamama Alliance. He had to go to back and forth to Ecuador. My Hunger Project colleagues were freaked out that I wasn't there, but they managed, you know, there were many of them. So they filled in for me. And I was sick for a year.
Oh, wow.
My malaria lasted for 9 months, and there were like 3 months of regaining my strength. So then when I tried to go back to the Hunger Project, there wasn't really a spot for me anymore. I mean, there was, they would have welcomed me with open arms. I don't mean to say it about them. It was more like they had filled in that gap. And I was, first of all, a little bit hurt. And then I was so proud. Oh my God, I have trained all these people and they're totally capable. I can do the Pachamama Alliance. And so I actually had to, I'm trying to answer your question without another 10 stories. I really had to reframe what it meant to work in the Amazon. And I had a final trip to Ghana. So I'll just tell one more story. Can I do that? Am I taking
you can do that, Lynn.
That's how I answer all my questions. I went to Ghana to do one more trip for the Hunger Project, and I was sitting on a desert with some Ghanaian elders, some old men. There were five of them, and we were having a meeting about the work there. And the men told me, you know, this used to be a rainforest. We were raised in a rainforest. And I looked around myself and they looked around, and it was absolute desert. And I said, no way. And they said, yes, when we were children, this was a forest. That's 40 years ago. And they were in their probably 70s and 80s. Often you can't tell in Africa how old people are, because they're kind of, you know, you just can't tell. I had no idea that they were that old. And then they said, it's been gone for 40 years. It was completely decimated by, you know, extractive industries and lumber, and it's been gone for 40 years, but we grew up in a rainforest. I thought, you're kidding. And I didn't know that. And then something started happening for me. I realized I'm still ending world hunger, but I'm moving to the preventive side of it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
The Amazon rainforest goes, there'll be another whole continent like Africa of people suffering, of people not able to feed their families. And I did a little research and found out that much of Africa, all of Bangladesh, all of India, was rainforest. And a lot of the source of the hunger and poverty is that it's all gone. So I started to reframe that, you know, God or the universe was asking me to go to the preventive end of that picture. And so it freed me to have a context, I'll say, because I'm very much into context, generating context and frameworks and paradigms that give you power, to see that I would be continuing my work to end hunger, but I would be doing it in partnership with Indigenous people who would be able to stop that destruction before it took away the very life support system on which they and the rest of us depend. So yes, I resisted, and it took me a long time to come to terms with what was happening to me.
If Lynn's story is inspiring you to explore your calling, what your committed life looks like in this current phase of your life, we invite you to visit menstrualityleadership.com, where you can find out more about the world's first leadership training designed for trailblazers, changemakers, nurturers, and creatives to realize your full authority and leadership through the power of the menstrual cycle. If you'd like to learn more about the program, and if now is the time for you to deepen your menstruality journey in this way, we have a free webinar coming up on December the 8th, It's called How to Channel the Powers of Your Menstrual Cycle to Step into Leadership. There'll be insights about what menstruality leadership is, a guided journey into the leadership wisdom within your cycle, all the info you need to know about the MLP, plus Q&A time with Alexandra and Shani. And if you're approaching menopause, you're in menopause, or you're now post-menopause, Alexandra and Shani will also be holding a special Q&A call about how to work with these menstruality teachings in this phase of your life. I'm going to drop the link to both of these events in the show notes, so you can go to redschool.net/podcast and you'll be able to find the page for this episode and click on the link to join us for one or both of the events. That's redschool.net/podcast.
Once again, I just want to really take in your words, Lynn, and pace some of the things you've said here, because they're so potent. I'll go back to the illness and having to be with myself. And I think of menopause as that's the quintessential message of menopause, is to come right back into yourself, to pull back your energies from the world and all the pies you've got your fingers in your mouth, and to pull it all back. And yes, will people cope, blah blah blah, and there is a moment of crisis for all those people as you pull the energy back. But it is, and for you it was compelled by a life-death situation of having malaria, but it brought you right back into yourself. And at menopause, what's happening is just this incredible alchemy that's going on the inside that is rewiring you for this larger context. And you come out with this realization that of this new context that is sort of behind the thing that you have been working with. And I'm reminded of something, I was listening to you speak on another podcast, actually, and you spoke about daring to have, big, bold visions. And I feel so strongly about that, and that post-menopause is the time for that. You are actually wired for that. And not only are you wired for that vision, but you're wired to step up, to serve it. I mean, when I look at you, I see someone, I mean, you're a few years older than me, and you are my latest role model, let me tell you. Lynn can do bloody do it, I'm going to go bloody do it. It gives me so much inspiration, because there you are doing this huge work in the world, and you are we're both older women, but you're older than me, and you're doing massive work. We are trying to ditch this idea that menopause is the end for us and that we become irrelevant. We become ever more relevant than we have ever been before.
I agree completely. And I love being a role model for you. Thank you very much, because it's so helpful to have someone ahead of you in years.
It really is. I look for them.
It's so fired up. And mine is Jane Goodall. She's 10 years older than I am. Wow. I know her and love her. And, if you think about Jane Goodall, she's so not stopping. She, before COVID, was still traveling 300 days a year, seeing her roots and shoots, children all over the world, et cetera. And I totally agree with you that there's a real joy in this age. I mean, it makes me cry to be in my 70s. I love my 70s. So far, I seem to be totally with it. I know there's people who aren't as lucky as I in terms of their genetics, perhaps, or maybe their health. And my heart goes out to them. And I don't mean to be frivolous about this, but I've been given such a big mission that...
You have. That
my life, and I've accepted it, and that's what this new book is about, actually. that it's shaped me into someone who demands health and well-being from herself, demands energy, demands taking care of herself, but not for me, for the mission that I serve.
Yes. Yeah.
And that makes it all so worth living for, you know? And so I'm so grateful that I don't know if it's my genetics, my mom or my grandmothers that have given me so much strength at this age, but I feel more turned on, more fired up. You know, people say, are you retired? I say, no, I'm refired. I'm refiring. I don't know how many more years I'll be refired, but I feel like I can go another 27, you know.
Well, Jane Goodall is setting the marker for us.
Yeah, she is. She's so awesome.
She is.
And then what's the name of the wonderful woman who was chairman of the Girl Scouts? She's so incredible. She held that position till she was 103. What's her name? Or Frances Beinecke? Was she 96 or something? I love hearing about people like that. It makes me so happy. Because I feel like now I'm so free. I don't worry about whether people like me or, you know, I try to do my hair right, but if it's not okay, it's okay with me. You know, I mean, all the stuff that haunts you as a younger woman and, you know, are you thin and what about your waistline and all that? I mean, I cared about that and I still care about it. I don't mean to denigrate beauty. It's a huge part of being a woman, but it doesn't have me, I have it, and I'm in charge of myself. And I am clear that my life is given to me, and so it's mine to give. And that's so exciting and so much fun. And you have so much freedom and so much joy. And also then you really love so much, and I think this is true for all of us who are women who are listening, how fortunate it is to be a woman. I mean, how great is it to be a woman in today's world where even with the Dobbs decision and the fight over abortion and right to life, and even with, you know, the hashtag Me Too and all the things, that's even exciting that all of this is being revealed and that the divine feminine is going to seize the day and make it all come into balance. I'm positive that this is the Sophia century. This is the first century of the third millennium. It is the century when women will take our rightful role in co-equal partnership with men. It is the century when the divine feminine is the answer, the calling to all the big problems we face, the political breakdown, climate crisis, the health crisis, the education crisis. The divine feminine is the match for all of that. And it's coming through men too. But I'm positive that the divine feminine is, it's like menopause for the world. We're coming into this period where it's so clear that heart, forgiveness, commitment, collaboration rather than competition, all the feminine values are what's being called for, what's being demanded, what's being drawn out of us. So what a thrill to be a woman and a postmenopausal woman.
I love that phrase, the divine feminine will seize the day. And yes, we are in a great menopause moment in the world right now. You know, we're going through a breakdown to lead to an awakening, a massive awakening of the feminine. I'm absolutely with you. It's such a powerful image. It's such a powerful thing that you're saying, and that the divine feminine is coming through all of us, through all of us. There is just, I want to just also acknowledge that, you know, for some that are listening, they're thinking, yeah, but my callings are sort of more modest, and some, or you know, because you are very much on the world stage, you have a very big palette that you work with, if you like, and I've actually heard you say this, and this is something that I feel very strongly too, that there is no small job, that whatever we are called to do, there are a myriad ways that this world needs serving, and we are all called in different ways, and you have been called in a very grand global way, and others are called in much more intimate, subtle, delicate ways, within communities, within small communities, within families, and so on. And I just really wanted to name that something that you speak to as well. I've heard you say something similar to that, that there is no small calling.
Yeah, I think we're living at a time when every human being makes such a difference. And I think that's probably always been true, but now it's so clear to me. You know, the choices we make, each of us, impact the future of life for the next 1,000 years. That's become very clear now.
Yes.
And that ennobles your life. That makes your life ever more meaningful. It's not a burden. It's an ennoblement of life itself. And I'm thinking of people who are let's say caregivers to an elderly person, a person more elderly than they are, or a teacher, or someone who actually is having an interim job waiting tables, or maybe that's their calling to wait tables in a way that really transforms people's experience of being served. Any job, any assignment this lifetime for your soul and your body is the opportunity to make a difference for all humanity. That's what Buckminster Fuller taught me, one of my greatest teachers. Every little individual makes a difference that impacts all of humanity. And I didn't know that before I met him, but it's true. And I'm thinking when my mother died, one of the things that she asked me to do before she died was have at her funeral the delivery person from the pharmacy who brought the drug she needed for cancer to her home, because they formed a little bond. It was a young man. The lady at the cleaners, who every time my mother went in to pick up her cleaning, this woman was so cheerful, it would shift my mom's day. The woman who waited on her at her favorite restaurant was her favorite waitress. She asked me to call her and let her know that Mrs. Tenney had passed away and that she wanted her at the funeral. And that really made a huge difference to me. I put all this in my first book, The Soul of Money, about what my mom wanted for at her funeral. She wanted her manicurist. So when we had the funeral memorial service, the family sat in the front row, rightfully so, but these people who had become her family, the manicurist, the delivery person, the waitress, the person at the cleaners, they sat in the second row right behind the family because they knew her very, very well, and she loved them and they loved her. And the way they did their job touched her heart, impacted her life, and gave her final years a family, you know, that was really important to her. So I say that was my mom's great teaching before she died, and it makes me happy to tell you that. But I also want to say that if you're a kindergarten teacher and you know you're not just putting up with these kids for another year and doing the best you can with them, but you know that they will remember you for their whole lives. Mm-hmm. I remember very well my kindergarten teacher. Everybody probably does. The first teacher you had in school. Mm-hmm. And who she was impacted me. And I'm suggesting that no matter who you are, and no matter what your life assignment or even your temporary assignment is, you make a significant difference. And if you hold it in the context of having a purpose larger than your own life, that you're going to make a difference as a kindergarten teacher, maybe you're going to do it for 2 years. Those two classes of 22 kids in the first year and 18 kids in the second year are never going to forget the things that you taught them, the way you not bent over to talk to them, but got down to their level and spoke so that your face and their face were just equal, so that they could see how much you respected them at age 5. You know, these are things that seem tiny, but they come from living a purpose larger than yourself. They come from living a purpose, knowing that your life can matter and that you matter, and that you can matter in a way that inspires, uplifts, and contributes to every other human being who crosses your path.
Yes, and that's true for everybody at any age of life, stage of life. Mm. You've said it's just so powerful. And then I think of menopause and how it's that on steroids.
Yes. Really?
I think of menopause as so, it's so not about me anymore. You know,
yes.
About
yes.
my own ego, getting that out of the way, so that one is this clearer channel for whatever one is doing. It's just, you know, for whatever you're doing. It just seems to expand the lens and get rid of you at some level.
Yes, exactly.
And get rid of the arguments too, because at menopause, of course, you're going through menopause, you will argue. But actually you get beyond that, and there's just no argument. It's just what you have to do. And it's like, what's the next assignment? Okay, that's the next assignment. That's the next. You just receive it. And you kind of, you're in communion with something that's just talking to you.
Right. Well, it makes it clear that we're not in charge.
We're not in charge. There's something really working us.
Yeah.
I'd love, we've got about 5 minutes or so, or 4 minutes or so left, Lynn, and I'd love it if, you know, from your perspective now, and I think of, because there are many going through menopause who are really struggling today, and I feel actually part of that struggle is reflecting the huge struggle that the planet is growing, you know, that the world is going through, that there's some sort of mirroring there, that there is an intensifying of experience, and some are really struggling and they're not resourced, you know, they're just, and that's a really huge part of going through menopause well, is actually having resources, support, and people that believe in you and hold you and so on. But I'm wondering if there are any words that you can share or speak to those who maybe are in the depths of something now and not really certain of where they're going, or you know, what, just, you know, in the of things, from your perspective where you stand now, if there's anything that comes to mind that you would like to say, to speak.
Well, first of all, my heart goes out to people who are having a painful passage now, a depressing passage, a dark passage with menopause. And mine wasn't like that. So I really, maybe it was because I was so engaged in the world, but I don't know. I was fortunate. But I must say there's something that's so powerful about suffering. And one of the things that I've learned in my life, because I moved towards suffering, I learned that from Mother Teresa. That I rather than being repelled by suffering, I move towards it, and most women do actually. But I'll just say, in my deepest heart, I know that when we have periods of depression or suffering or pain or hurt, it deepens who we are. It really does. It deepens your soul. It deepens your capacity to feel. It is working you in a way that hurts, yes, just the way childbirth hurts, yes, when you're giving birth, it hurts. But in a way, menopause is giving birth, another form of giving birth to the next level of who you are, and deepening your capacity to feel pain, be empathetic, and ultimately experience joy, because pain and joy are one. They're all in the same continuum. And the deeper the pain, the more capacity for joy. The deeper the suffering, also the more capacity for love. I've seen that over and over again in my own life and in other people. Yeah. So the menopausal passage deepens, I think, our capacity to feel and our capacity to love for the major chapter of our life, which I'm in, so that's why I say it's major, the postmenopausal period, because what the world wants from us is our grandmother wisdom, our love, and our presence, our deep and profound presence, our profound listening. And you get that from deepening your own soul And often deepening your own soul requires suffering, requires pain, requires even what I call, not lightly, the horror of depression. But you will come out of it, and your capacity to feel and your capacity for joy will be 10, 20, 30 times what it was before you went through that passage.
Oh, Lynn, that is just so beautiful, what you've spoken. And I'm especially touched by just the power of our presence in the world and our listening, and it opening our capacity for the presence and the listening and our capacity for love. It's beautiful, really beautiful. Lynn, I'm incredibly grateful for this conversation. I feel I have been fueled, tanked up by your passion and your commitment and your love and your generosity, because I know you're incredibly busy and you are incredibly generous with your time. You're just totally there in service, and it is a complete inspiration. And it has actually personally really filled me up, this conversation with you. I want to really acknowledge your latest book, which I think is a perfect companion with our new book, Wise Power. Yours is really the perfect thing, this Living a Committed Life. And it is a life that is committed to something bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And it is also that the word committed is very important. And that act of commitment, you really wake up something, as you write about it so beautifully. It's a wonderful book. It's very, very readable. And you have wonderful stories in it as well, which I was loving reading. So I just want to really celebrate your book that's coming out on October the 18th. And to deeply thank you for our wonderful, wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Lynn.
I loved it myself. I had so many revelations right here, right now. I'm so grateful to you, Alexandra, and good luck on your book. And thank you so much for this conversation. I'll never forget it. And how lucky we are, really. How fortunate, how blessed, really. Not luck. I don't know about luck, but blessings are definitely blessed. Abundant, even at a time of enormous crisis, the deep gratitude I have for you, the work you do, and that you have, that you're empowering and supporting and teaching women that this is the best time of life. So thank you so much.
Wow, what a conversation. Two incredibly powerful women. I'm so inspired. I'd love to hear how it was for you, what you think. Let me know, sophie@redschool.net. And I'd also love to reiterate our invitation to our upcoming free webinar on December the 8th, how to channel the powers of your menstrual cycle to step into leadership. If you want to hear more about our menstruality leadership program, or simply understand how you can work with your menstrual cycle to get to know your calling and to express it more in your life. And if you're approaching menopause, or you're currently in your menopause transition or your post-menopause, Alexandra and Sharni are going to be holding a free Q&A call on December the 6th about how you can work with the menstruality teachings in this phase of your life. So I'm going to drop both links to both events into the show notes for this episode. So you can find the show notes at redschool.net/podcast. And we really warmly welcome you to join us for one or both of those events. Okay, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode. And until then, just keep living life according to your own brilliant rhythm.